Okay, good afternoon or good morning, everyone. I want to talk about nerds in the news. So I want to talk to you about why I find it exciting to work in a news organization. And I've been doing so for the past year and what I've learned there. So I'm part of this program called Open News. It's a joint venture between Mozilla Foundation and the Knight Foundation in the United States. And basically what they do is they send technologists like myself and Annabelle and Mike, who are sitting up there, into news organizations for 10 months to kind of work with journalists there and figure out what kind of technical solutions can we find to some of journalism's problems, whether those are in how to make money or how to tell better stories. I'm more interested in the latter part. So basically, Open News is this kind of place where we're trying to kind of bring together journalists who are interested in technology and in the implication of the web on journalism, and technologists who are interested in telling stories with the web and telling stories in new ways. Open News also organizes a number of other things, including hack days, hack events, and a website called Source, source.opennews.org, that you should look at, where we have a lot of articles on best practices for technology for news and similar things. Well, I don't know. Do I have to explain the relevance of journalism to what's happening to all of us at this conference? I don't think so, right? The biggest speech here is by a journalist. Journalism and hackers have already met in many, many ways. It's clear that this field these fields are more and more overlapping, that what's in the hacker ethics, that you should use public information, and what journalists do does overlap, and there's a clear link between the two things. So obviously it's interesting to look at what journalists are doing, but I think you can go even further and look at, okay, what can we do, not just in terms of telling people the story of what's happening with technology, what's happening with surveillance, what's happening with all these things, but what can we also do in terms of making journalism itself better, making the news better. And also there's this little fact that if you think the music industry got it bad with the internet, look at news. They're really, really in deep trouble with what's happened. And the business model now is more than questionable. So how do we make sure that news that gets done, that the kind of fourth estate gets preserved, right? It's funny to look at it, because like journalism used to serve many, many different functions. There used to be the part that kind of did advertisements. There used to be the part that did, it told you where to buy a used car and all this kind of stuff. And then there's the part that tells you whether your government is corrupt or not. And we've kind of taken the easy parts and ported them to the web. We've taken where to buy your car and put it on eBay, Craigslist, all this stuff. And then there's the hard bits, which are kind of figuring out whether your government is corrupt, figuring out whether policy decisions are good, and all that stuff. And we haven't really figured out how to kind of rebuild those natively on the web. What we do is still basically do the same journalism that we used to do a long time ago. Another reason why journalism is really interesting, I think, for nerds is because it's a great place to build open source software. Here's just a few things that have been built in newsrooms or kind of maintained by newsrooms. Django was built initially to be a content management system for news organizations. Backbone came out of a project called Document Cloud that was meant to store documents for journalists to look at. Timeline, for example, is a nice tool to visualize stories over time. And data-driven documents, I don't know who here has heard about D3 and data visualization that comes with it, but it's a power tool for kind of visualizing stories. So kind of open source is really alive in some news organizations. And that also makes it fascinating to work there, because you kind of get to share the method and then have the story exclusively to yourself. So where do kind of nerds and journalists really meet? I think one of the most interesting points where the two kind of overlap in their interests and activities is something like data-driven journalism. So journalism that isn't based just on making a telephone call or verifying information by having interviews with people, but that uses data as a source and also as a way to present information, to present the story in the end. You as data journalist has made this nice phrase that data journalism was kind of social science with a deadline. So the idea is that you're trying to conduct very small kind of experiments on what is true about society, and one of the most important tools for doing that nowadays is all the public data that's available for making this information more available for analyzing and understanding how society works, how politics works, how the economy works, and how business works. So this idea of data-driven journalism isn't entirely new. It's been around for a while. It used to be called computer-assisted reporting. But I think what's exciting is that there is now a growing community of people that are really looking into this in more depth. This includes kind of organizations that are not traditional news organizations and have really taken data as a part of their essence of what they do. In the US, you've got organizations like ProPublica or the Texas Tribune, which are kind of very data-driven news organizations. In Europe, you've got organizations like Open Data City or Journalism Plus Plus that kind of take this as one of their operating principles. But even more exciting than these companies, I think, is this idea of hacks and hackers. So I don't know who of you is familiar with this, but there's this growing network of meetups, essentially, where you bring together hacks, like journalists and hackers, and try to get them to find a common language to talk about the problems that are trying to solve in doing good investigative work. One of them is in Berlin. There's one in Hamburg here, if you're interested. They're all over Europe and the whole world. This one here is in Buenos Aires, where you have hackers from all over Latin America come together and figure out, okay, how do we get information from public bodies better? How do we present this information? How do we kind of condense it into a story? And so I think if you have an opportunity and if you want to kind of find out a bit more about how journalists think, what their needs are, how you can do something that is journalism in essence, I think going to one of these meetings, talking to some journalists there, and trying to figure out what is it that we can do that would support their activities is really a valuable thing to do. So you've got these two worlds, really, right? You've got one world, which is where we are right now, and it's the kind of the world of the nerds. And this is where I spent last year. Spiegel's headquarters, it happens to be just opposite the old town from here, so just at the other side of town. And these are very different worlds, and they follow very different rules, right? And I want to kind of show you, or kind of talk to you about a few of the differences that I think are interesting. So before I joined the Open News program in Spiegel, I worked on open data projects. And this is maybe a minor point, but basically, I think it's really interesting to look at how open data can be made relevant. Before I used to work for an organization called the Open Knowledge Foundation, which, as I have been asked to announce, does a meetup at 6:30 in Noisy Square. And we used to think a lot about how can we change government's policies to make the data available? How can we make sure that the data that comes out is free of any copyright claims, is free of any restrictions? Basically, it's like the FOSS discussion that we keep having about software as well. When you come into a news organization, the stuff kind of gets more tangible. What you worry about is not so much is this stuff free of copyright, but A, can I get it, and B, can I analyze it? And if that's given, then you're fine, and you'll be all happy. So one thing that some of the fellows of the Open News program have been doing, to give an example, is this tool called Tabula. Because often public information isn't available in spreadsheets. The way it's available is as a PDF file that's somewhere on a government website. And getting data out of PDFs is notoriously hard. It's a horrible format. It's often being used intentionally out of malice and out of kind of obscurity to obscure public information to make sure that it cannot be analyzed. But Mike, who's over here, and Manuel worked on this tool called Tabula. And basically what it does is try and take PDFs. In this case, I've got the budget of Nepal. And let you highlight all the sections in there that are tables, and then make sure that these sections kind of come out to you as a CSV file that you can then analyze and understand. And I think building these tools and making sure that they're easy enough to use for a journalist. So this also has a CLI, but like nobody in journalism would be able to use a command line tool. Making sure that this stuff is accessible enough for normal people to use, I think makes it really, really interesting as a way to support journalism, as a way to kind of make sure that they have more powerful tools at their hand. Maybe this is a horrible thing to say, but like one thing we can try is roll back the NSA's capabilities that they have in terms of analyzing all of our information. But another thing that we need to start doing is to make sure that we also have tools to understand what the government is doing. We need to have tools that are that are as strong in understanding government activity and understanding business activity and understanding what companies are doing, how companies are related, how kind of global structures of tax and revenue work, in order to kind of keep these structures under control as they have now for spying on us. And if you look at this, this is a long way from PRISM. So the other thing that I found kind of interesting is coming from here, coming from a background as a computer guy, I'm really interested in building platforms and tools and all this kind of stuff, right? And then you talk to people at a news organization, and the one thing they're interested in is telling a story. Nothing else matters, right? You don't want to build a platform. You don't want to kind of build tools. You don't want to do any of these things. What you want to do is you want to tell a good story that people can read and that maybe has an impact on whoever it is about. And that's a really hard gap to bridge. And it's interesting because for me, it's still really hard to kind of condense all the stuff that I'm doing down into stories. But also, I think for basically all the main media organizations, at least in Germany, it's virtually impossible to run something that we would call a platform, that would look like a platform. Maybe to give an example, this is a story that should have come out of this building. It's about the census that was conducted in 2011, and it's about how the methods that were used for sampling are insufficient, and therefore the entire census might be ruled to be insufficient as a basis for the distribution of funds between state and local or municipal level in Germany. So, I mean, lots of people in this room and lots of people at this conference have been fighting against the census. And I think that we need to get better at telling it in a way that kind of makes it something that is tangible, explaining, okay, they didn't ask enough people, therefore this thing is really not a good proxy of how many people live there, who they are, and therefore we cannot use this as a reliable foundation for our state. So that's kind of the story point of view, the story way of looking at it. Another project that I want to show very quickly that goes the other way is kind of this, which is something that I built during the fellowship. It tries to take all the data that comes out of German statistics. There's a system called Genesis, run by the German Statistics Office, and it tries to make this data available in a better form and make sure that there's always an up-to-date kind of CSV version of the data that you can use easily, and then it makes available an API for the data so that you can easily connect visualizations to statistical data and make sure that they always represent the latest state of the data. So that's a very different way of thinking about things, right? On the one hand, you've got something that you can read, and you then understood something. This is much more about kind of, oh, we're building a foundation for things. Just to say that this doesn't have to be ugly. This is what it looks like in the United States. They've got a project there called Census Reporter, which I think is really fantastic. They have prepared fact sheets on every I think county in the United States. And they make it possible to compare these counties and then kind of find things that are interesting about them. How does the place where I live rack up against all the other places that are out there? How does this compare to the rest? And what are the most extreme places? And why are they so extreme, right? And then you get back into storytelling territory once you do this whole loop of kind of going through the thing like that. The interesting thing is I don't think that any media organization in Germany would be able to run such a thing right now. One thing that I still want to do and that I tried to pitch to media organizations was about making a thing, an app that would track the coalition treaty. So you've got this coalition treaty, and whether you agree with it or whether you don't agree with it, there is something like 200 or so agreements in there. And wouldn't it be interesting to look at how many of these agreements are actually going to be implemented and how many of these agreements are going to be transformed beyond recognition in the process of being formed into law, and how many of these things never actually make it onto the agenda over the next 4 years, or however many years we'll have to endure this. And to kind of track this stuff, right? But this is kind of a project that would have to last over 4 years and would be something that is bigger than just kind of one story that you write up in 6 hours or even 2 weeks or even 4 weeks. It's something that would be run continuously. And that is something that I think media organizations haven't learned how to do yet. And I still think that it's something that is interesting that we need to start doing, especially if you're talking about data, because often the kind of initial upfront costs of working with the data is quite high. You need to invest a lot of time into making the stuff accessible. And then kind of having it just for a story that runs on your homepage for one day just doesn't make economic sense. So you need to get into a place where this stuff gets used continually. And that is something that I think people in this building and in this room should look at doing and should look at starting. This has already started at CCC. Like, there's a fantastic app that someone, I think, at CCC Aachen has done around the German basic law and how it's evolved over time. This kind of stuff kind of creates a foundation for then doing very simple analysis. Okay, how many basic freedoms have been modified over the past 60 years, and have there been any extensions, or has it always been going back into reducing these freedoms? So that's, I think, one of the most interesting things is we've basically managed to turn a lot of what journalism used to do into platforms. We've managed to turn part of the business model of journalism into platforms like Craigslist, eBay, whatever the names are. We've managed to turn the funny part, the comic section, right? That's BuzzFeed now. That's things like what's it called? 9gag, wherever you get your entertainment. Even Facebook, to some extent, has that function of informing me about what my community is up to. And in that sense, I think we can consider it a bit of kind of journalism replacement. No journalist would ever agree to the fact that Facebook is journalism, but it's actually replacing some of what the functionality of journalism used to be. But we also have to look at the kind of hard and nasty bits of journalism, at looking at really complex power structures and looking at really complex institutional kind of fuck-ups. And how these can be understood. And that's something that we haven't really started working on yet, that we haven't really got the appropriate tools for. And I think when we do that, one of the more important things is we shouldn't disregard these institutions. They have a lot of knowledge about how to do things. That's one really good thing. So understanding, having kind of established journalistic ethics, having knowledge about how to double check and how to verify facts, having knowledge about how to write something up, how to construct a narrative. These are all things that are really important. Another reason that we shouldn't disregard them is because they're really big. And there's something there where if we, the internet, kind of try to make a case, try to kind of make ourselves heard against an institution that's really big, like the German government or the US government, the only thing we can really do is a shitstorm, right? And shitstorms are kind of bad mechanisms, right? You have these things, and they're unreliable, they're messy, they may go the wrong way, and you cannot really start one intentionally very well, and you cannot rely on the fact that they're going to be successful, right? So they're a really bad way of arm wrestling with a big institution like a government or a big multinational company. Media organizations, for all that you can say about them that's kind of weird and a bit strange, they are big organizations too, right? They can kind of do arm wrestling with these entities on one level. It's kind of funny, right? When you get an email address that ends on something that's a media organization, the response time of German government bodies kind of quarters, and the responses are radically different, right? You go from, no, we cannot give you this data, to, do you need it by 2 o'clock, or is 3 o'clock still okay? So there is something there about kind of this institutional arm wrestling that we need to either kind of continue to have, or we need to find an appropriate replacement. But I'm not sure what that would be. Third, there's kind of this thing between tools and literacy, right? If you're like me, you like sitting down at your laptop building something really amazing, right? So for example, I couldn't stop myself from building this thing. I don't know who here has looked into German voting law, but it's really messed up at this point, because there's been lots and lots of kind of political compromise going into how votes in the federal election are being tallied. And in order to really understand it, I wanted to build a little tool that would kind of implement the tallying procedure and for me to kind of play through different scenarios. What is kind of the most extreme parliament we could have? We could have gone up to something like 820, 810 seats in parliament if things had gone wrong and AfD or FDP had gotten into parliament. And what are the different kind of edge cases of this voting law we have, right? The problem with this is that it's not really valuable to any journalist on this planet. So for them, I think a lot of what we need to do in order to support journalism and to support journalists is about building literacy. So as I said, I have colleagues, they're smarter than me. Noah Veltman is at the BBC, and he instituted what he called learning lunches. And I think these are really fantastic, fantastic little ideas. What he did was bring together a lot of journalists who had never kind of heard about much kind of technology stuff before, and tell them about some specific topic. So in this case, he talked about maps, and he kind of explains what's a longitude, what's a latitude, and then goes into, well, how do you express that in a computer? How do you project a map? Okay, these things are not actually accurate. Wow, good recognition. And then he kind of goes beyond that and what kind of the current state of the art in mapping technology is. And he did this for a number of things. For example, how does a web server and a web browser work? And I think having this information out there and keeping it reasonably abstract, because I think at this point it's clear that people cannot just have like an understanding of, well, there's the bar in there and I type in the internet address and then the web page pops up. That's not enough. That's neither enough if you're trying to get people to report correctly about the web, but it's also not enough if you want them to use it in creative ways. There's this kind of observation that we used to amongst print journalists, basically every print journalist could tell you in very minute detail how the product kind of went from being on whatever their typesetting system was to the doorstep of whoever their readers were. And people really used to have an understanding of this, and that means they understood, well, we have to get this done by 11 o'clock tonight, and then it'll be out in the morning, and all this kind of stuff. Now this has become more complex, and people need to understand more about the technology they're using to tell stories. AMR, because only then can they start using these technologies in interesting ways. Only then can they start presenting stuff in ways that is different from an article, right? I mean, what we're doing at the moment is we're still kind of presenting news as if in any given moment we would expect this technocapocalypse where we would have like 5 minutes to print all the articles out, and they would still need to look the very, very same, right? We're still making print articles and just putting them on the web. And this kind of literacy and this knowledge of how the web kind of works, of how digital technology works, I think enables people to get a better understanding of what the medium they're working with is and then kind of work with this stuff. And that kind of brings me back to Hacks and Hackers, because that's, I think, one of the places where if you do it well, you can get into an interesting discussion where you can learn something about journalism, how to make a case, how to tell a story, how to present something to people in a way that makes it matter to them. And on the other hand, where journalists can also learn something about the media that they're now working with and how to use those beyond just kind of typing into the narrow window of a CMS. So that's kind of a very quick review. And I think working in a media organization has been really interesting in terms of differences between how you'd like to do stuff, whether it is about kind of platforms versus stories, whether it is about caring about free and libre and open, or just kind of trying to get stuff to work, or whether it is about whether you want to kind of hack on tools or try to build up literacy and to build up capacity in these organizations. And I think that it's really important that we get either more journalists to learn something about technology and to use it in their work. I think it's implausible that a profession that still thinks that kind of the telephone is the greatest information retrieval device we have is going to provide us with good information over the next decades. On the other hand, I think it's also really interesting and really appealing for technologists like ourselves to kind of learn more about journalism and to engage in it. And whether you do that with a media organization or whether you do that independently, that's up to you. I would say try work with a media organization. They have the reach, they have the kind of power to talk to many people at once. And that is something that we need to do when we have found good stories in whatever kind of data we are looking at. Well, thank you.
We will have a Q&A. Please line up on the microphones throughout the audience. We have four and a signal angel in the internet. No internet questions at the moment. Please start with your question.
Hi. If you allow me, I'd like to ask about money. Because being a journalist and the CEO of a fellowship program for journalistic innovation myself, I have experienced that it's very difficult to get computer guys like you just said, into the newsrooms and to have them work with journalists because the pay, it sucks. So I would like to know what your experience is and what you think beyond the things you said that should make people want to go into newsrooms, but what can journalists do? What can we do just to get programmers who might, on the free market, get a lot more money to still get interested in journalism?
The honest answer is I don't know. There is not a lot of money in journalism. It's about kind of doing something that's interesting. I think that's what you can pitch a lot of people on, right? Like everyone here is attending so many interesting talks about stuff that really needs to be revealed. And making it clear to people that they can do that with a media organization is probably one of the best ways, because as you say, you can't pay them good enough money. The other thing is learn some stuff, or kind of encourage journalists to learn some tech themselves, right? There is, of course, a lot of stuff that is hard. Learning programming is something that I think pays off after a while. But kind of just learning how to do some very simple stuff, some data visualization, some data analysis. I've done a lot of training for journalists in the last time, and kind of over the last 2 years. And like often you have to start with teaching them how to sort stuff in a spreadsheet. And I think that's something you can learn by yourself. And often that already gives you some stories. And I wouldn't disregard the idea of just kind of becoming a bit more nerdy yourselves.
Hi, Friedrich. It's nice to see you again. And thanks for this. It was good to get a sense of what you've been doing over the last year. So my question is sort of, I think, probably following on from what you just started talking about, which is that how do you negotiate the resistance that journalists have to working with data or datafying journalism? I mean, some of the people I've been talking to at the moment kind of see it as, oh, there's a story and then you add some, you know, some pie charts on the side. And we know from, you know, the New York Times and, you know, the Guardian and things that there are very different ways to actually kind of bring tech and the design of websites and the interaction that readers can have with data and storytelling. And but yet there are some, maybe it's a generational thing as well, just a different kind of journalist who says, no, that's, I don't need data in my story. Or you have investigative journalists who are already very good and adept at managing their information and their data. So I'm wondering if you can just talk a little bit about any experiences you've had in trying to negotiate resistance.
Thank you. I'm not sure I have a good answer. I think often people aren't that reluctant to use good information if they can have it. Like I had something very, very nice when I scraped a lot of information about European public procurement contracts that European governments had made with private companies. And so you sit down with a journalist, you kind of have a SQL prompt, and you type in queries that kind of loosely correspond to the kind of questions that they come up with. And it's really cool because they can see that you can get basically answers to arbitrary questions out of this database, right? But then the more difficult thing is really the next step, right? How do you manage to get this kind of capacity gap where if they just have the SQL prompt and they don't have you, how do they still have the capacity of doing this stuff? And I think that often people aren't resistant against kind of involving data in their stories. They just don't know how to. And for that, I think people would have to train up themselves. I think Hacks and Hackers is a place where you can find maybe a friendly techie to work with. And all these kind of opportunities you have to look at.
Hi, I'm Maurits. I'm a journalism student from the Netherlands. And I'm starting an internship in about a week at Bits of Freedom in the Netherlands. And I've seen a kind of a development in journalism that there's much more interest in data journalism. And I want to learn how to make like graphics myself. How can I visualize the information that I find? How can I find this information? And I think it's great that you do trainings. I think it's also great when maybe a bunch of hackers who are also interested in this subject can make like a website, sort of a how-to guide for a guy like me who doesn't have a lot of time and not a lot of money to attend these trainings.
They already did. Good news.
Okay.
So there's a project called the School of Data that I would like to point at, schoolofdata.org, which is basically like a massively on... there you are. Talk to Michael over there. He helps to run it. So they have a lot of resources, whether it's very simple stuff like how do I sort stuff in a spreadsheet, And they also do data expeditions where basically you meet up for a week and you have a challenge, find out about extractive revenues in Nigeria. And then you try to work together on these things. And because you're in a team with people who have different skills and maybe some have more skills than you, you actually learn a lot about how to do this type of analysis. A few other resources to point up, there's a website called Drawing by Numbers. There is lots of stuff on all these kind of online learning sites like Coursera and Khan Academy that can help you. But really, the main thing is not trying to read a book. It's not trying to. This is actually something that I think journalists consistently believe more than technologists, is that you learn stuff by reading a book. And that's not true for technology. For technology, you need to pick a project and do it. And in the process of doing it, you learn it. And you need to have something that you want to solve, and then you can kind of find out how to do it and Google it.
So thanks to Friedrich Lindenberg for the talk. He will have a session on the Noisy Square.
Yes, so okay, if you're interested in open data and open knowledge, there's a session at 6:30 in Noisy Square.